Well, regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be talking with Amy Swear from Advancing America's Freedom about the Hamani decision, about the Wolford decision. Would love to have chatted with Amy about the orders from conference that came out this morning, but we actually recorded this interview on a Friday afternoon, so we didn't know what was going to happen. It's interesting. There were some Second Amendment-related cases that were GVR'd, all of them dealing with 922G3, the prohibition on unlawful drug users possessing firearms. The Supreme Court did nothing with the five cases dealing with the bans on so-called assault weapons and magazines. They did nothing with the five cases that are related to either prohibitions on the purchase or the carrying or possession of firearms by adults under the age of 21. There are five hardware cases. There are five age cases. None of them got GVR'd. None of them were denied. None of them were mentioned in Monday's orders. So what that means, I think, is anybody's guess right now. I've seen folks like Hannah Hill from National Association for Gun Rights more optimistic that this means the court will hold over the hardware cases. I confess I'm a little more optimistic about that, too. But, you know, if they're waiting for that circuit court split to develop and they say, you know, maybe the thinking is, all right, well, the Third Circuit's going to probably come out with its opinion in the New Jersey gun and magazine ban case at some point over the summer. They've been waiting for what we said in Wolford. Now they've got that decision, so we'll just hang on to these cases. And in the fall, this will be a live issue. We'll have a circuit court split. It still doesn't explain why they didn't do anything with the age cases, because there's already a circuit court split. You already have courts like the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals that say, no, when you're 18, 19, 20 years old, you're an adult, and you're vested with your Second Amendment rights. And then you've got like the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals and the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals have said, actually, not really. The 11th Circuit Court of Appeals at least has said that as far as banning the purchase of firearms for under 21s, that's okay. And then the Fourth Circuit has said banning the purchase of handguns for under 21s, that's all right, too, because, you know, back in 1791, an 18, 19, 20-year-old, I mean, they were considered infants in the eyes of the law. They couldn't enter into contracts. And so the infancy doctrine means that, you can bar an 18, 19, 20-year-old from purchasing handguns today. I think that those decisions are directly implicated by what the Supreme Court said in Wolford. So it is worth noting the GVRs that came today, the cases that were granted cert, lower court decisions vacated, the cases remanded back down to those lower circuit courts in light of Hamani, it took about a week and a half for that decision to come out, right? Hamani was decided not last week, but the week before last. And I believe it was decided on Tuesday of that week. Then you had the conference on Thursday, and then the orders came out on Monday. There was nothing. Then last week, you had the Hamani decision come out, the Wolford decision come out. So it is possible that it just takes a little bit of time for those GVRs to get developed, and that we'll see a miscellaneous order at some point this week, GVRing the age cases and maybe the hardware cases too, based on what the court said in Wolford. I am not 100% convinced that just because the court didn't take any action in these cases today, that means the court's going to hold over all 10 of these cases until the fall term. Wish that that was the case. I'm not convinced that it is the case. I am less concerned, though, about the court simply denying cert in these cases. I think if that were going to happen, it would have happened by now. There's no reason to wait for Hamani or Wolford to be released. There's no reason why you couldn't have seen that denial months ago. So I'm still cautiously optimistic they're going to hang on to the hardware ban cases. I'm still thinking, though, we may get a miscellaneous order later in the week that GVRs those cases, and I would almost certainly expect the age-based cases to be GVR'd back down to the lower courts in light of what the Supreme Court said in Wolford. But We shall see. And there is a lot of good news, I think, to come out of Wolford, even if it means the court is able to kick these cases down the road for another term or two, as frustrating as that is. I think the takeaways of both Amani and Wolford are net positives for gun owners and for Second Amendment jurisprudence. That's why I'm so glad we could talk with Amy Swear from Advancing America's Freedom about these cases. And again, what the implications are, not just, you know, immediately for Hawaii's vampire rule, but for all kinds of gun control laws going forward. Take a look and a listen. Amy, it's good to see you again. Thanks so much for coming on the program today.
Hey, Cam, it's always good to join you.
And I know it's been a couple of days since we got the Wolford decision, but honestly, I'm still in the mood to celebrate. And there's a lot to celebrate in this decision. I have said that Wolford, you know, when this case was first accepted by the Supreme Court, they made it seem like this was going to be a very narrow decision, right? They're only going to answer this question about the vampire rule. I'm pleasantly surprised at how much weight Wolford will have, I think, in virtually every 2A challenge going forward. Is that am I off base in thinking that?
Yes and no. So okay. On the one hand, it is still at its core just dealing with the vampire, which the court missed the opportunity to adopt the vampire rule as its unofficial name. But this is a very narrow and limited law. Like this isn't something that at its core is going to affect every American immediately on their day-to-day public carry. You know, it was a law that had never existed even in Hawaii up until 10 seconds ago, right? And even in the couple of states that had passed it, I think Hawaii is the only one in which it wasn't enjoined where it had ever even, you know, gotten close to going into effect. And at the end of the day, unfortunately for Hawaii's lawful gun owners, let's not pretend like suddenly they have this unrestricted right to bear arms in public. There's still a whole litany of places where they can't carry right now under a whole lot of place-related laws, the sensitive places laws that the Supreme Court hasn't gotten to yet. But you are right in that, you know, in a worst-case scenario, the court could have written this opinion much more narrowly. And there's a lot of good stuff in there that I think will have ultimately an impact going forward in a broader sense than I think many of us even hoped for in our wildest dreams. Some of the language that they used, that the court used here, and some of the clarifications that they made about the Bruin test really took on some of the ways in which lower courts have manipulated that test to sort of circumvent having to get into the history and analysis test by using that first step to say, oh, well, this isn't a Second Amendment issue at all. And the majority opinion really goes to some length to demonstrate just how much that undermines what the Bruin test is and takes that away from courts, at least in theory going forward. You know, how much some of these lower courts will abide by that remains to be seen. But there's a lot of good stuff, even though it is still pretty narrow in terms of what it actually accomplishes in striking down the law.
The holding itself, I think, is narrow because, you know, the question that they're answering is pretty narrow. Right. But the dicta, right, the way that they explain how they reached that holding, I think, is where you get into the expansiveness, right? And you know, starting again with that, the test that is used, and you know, you talk about how the courts have, I mean, Snope versus Brown, Fourth Circuit, I think, is a perfect example of this, upholding Maryland's ban on assault weapons by saying, well, we don't even have to reach whether or not, you know, this law is justified by history because these arms aren't protected by the Second Amendment anyway. They're dangerous and unusual. And the Wolford decision basically comes right out and says that approach is wrong. That's not how you do it, right? You look at the plain text of the Second Amendment, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. All right. So if the law impacts the people's ability to keep and bear arms, then the text of the Second Amendment is implicated. And now the burden, the law is presumptively unconstitutional.
Right.
Right. And now the burden falls on the defendant, the state or the federal government, to prove that it is constitutional, that it is a part of a national tradition of gun ownership and gun regulation. And that's where, you know, again, they also elaborate on that, too. Right. So what does that look like? I think the phrase that Justice Alito used was that these were, you know, widespread laws, widely accepted laws. And there was one other a term that he used in there as well. So basically, you know, a couple of laws here and there, maybe laws from one geographic region, one time in our nation's history. That's not enough to satisfy the test.
Absolutely. And you know, again, to sort of take a step back, it puts that analysis back in its proper place at step two. Because like you said, courts have been trying to get around this with step one, right? By taking that burden away from the government, but still sort of showing in a very manipulated historical way. Let's not pretend this was ever in good faith with their historical analysis on this, but doing exactly what Hawaii tried to do in Wolford, and what if you read the dissents in Wolford, you know, what they went with at the first test, or at the first step of this test, which was to say, well, again, this isn't a Second Amendment issue. This is a property issue, right? This isn't a Second Amendment issue because these aren't arms. So we're going to use this sort of bastardized historical analysis to say, well, historically, these aren't arms, but in a way that has a lesser burden for the government instead of, again, putting it in that proper place. And so you're right. So a lot of those clarifications about just how narrowly defined those historical parameters are. In some respects, you know, if you think of Rahimi from a couple of years ago as sort of the far less restrictive end of that test, this is sort of a bookend to that, of narrowing it back down and saying, look, it doesn't have to be a historical dead ringer. You don't need a twin, but you do need to have relatively the same type of principle, the same how and the why, you know, in a way that, frankly, I think calls into question some of the analysis they did in Rahimi a little bit. But it is good to see the court pulling that back. Because again, you look at what we have here that Hawaii is trying to rely on for historical analogs. You had laws that were about poaching, right? These had nothing to do with just generalized fears of armed people. This was about people trespassing onto land and specifically hunting, using those natural resources without the landowner's permission. That's a far cry from, and this, by the way, is like open land, right? There's no evidence whatsoever that this would have applied to, because you're not going to go into a retail store and poach, right? The deer inside of the retail store. That's simply not a harm that you're thinking about in terms of, you know, the types of places and businesses that Hawaii wanted to apply this to. Another important point that the court gets into is look at the effect. Right. The effect of these anti-poaching laws wasn't to eviscerate the right entirely. And when you look at what Hawaii did, 96% of Maui County, for example, is now off limits. That should tell you right away that's a red flag about the how and the why and the purpose this is serving.
Mm-hmm. You know, OK, so that brings me to another question. I mean, because while this case was, again, about the vampire rule, the banned carrying by default on all private property that's open to the public, Justice Alito, in the majority opinion, noted that Hawaii also, by statute, prohibits the carrying of firearms in places that, you know, gun owners travel to every day, whether it's convenience stores, gas stations, grocery stores. And again, this case was not about those sensitive places, but I sure was left with the impression that the court is willing to give the government some leeway in terms of banning firearms on government property. But when it comes to the government dictating, hey, property owners, you can't allow firearms here, even if you want to, we're not going to let you, that the court sees a real problem with that.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on how, to some extent, you want to read this. And I think this has been a problem, not just in this opinion, but I mean, even in Bruin, with some of the concurrences and the footnotes that have been unfortunately used by lower courts and some of these, you know, gun control heavy jurisdictions. So sort of say, well, you know, the court said, you know, for example, in Britain, we're not going to cast doubt on X, Y, and Z laws, which is supposed to be taken to mean that, you know, that the judges during these challenges have to go through and do the analysis themselves. Right. But it's just been taken to mean, well, you know, that the Supreme Court didn't say it wasn't allowed, so therefore we're going to uphold it, which is not the same thing. You do have some language in Justice Barrett's concurrence, which I thought was otherwise very good, but some language where she brings up the how and why, the historical analog analysis, and does seem perhaps to indicate that, you know, there's a breadth that the government is allowed with sensitive places as long as they can show specific harms. But on the other hand, I think you can also read that language a very different way, as her saying, yeah, if the government wants to declare something a sensitive place and to say that specific type of location is off limits, it actually has to demonstrate a particular harm that is specific to that place, that is not just, well, you know, criminals could walk into a church, right? You know, that there is some genuine harm that is specific to that location in a way that isn't, you know, in the way that Hawaii was trying to use it to say, well, you know, this is about the specific harm of gun violence generally as a result of people going into commercial businesses without permission. So it's a bit up in the air. But there is a lot to like, again, about how I think realistically, as these sensitive places questions come before the Supreme Court, I think it's a pretty good indication of how the Supreme Court will deal with it, which I think will be much more narrowly in terms of giving the government that leeway than we will see with like the Ninth Circuit or the Second Circuit. So, you know, I think that's just unfortunate the way that some of that language can be manipulated. But let's not pretend like if they had just said, no, there are no sensitive places whatsoever, the Ninth Circuit still wouldn't, you know, look at that and be like, the spirit of Aloha.
Right.
So,
yeah. And I should mention to the audience, by the way, that we're recording this on Friday afternoon. So we don't know what happened with the final conference. We don't know what cases, what happened to the hardware cases or the cases dealing with, you know, gun bans for under 21s. But you know, it seems to me, that those cases, particularly the age-based gun bans, this is another area where Wolford might actually prove to be helpful for gun owners, because again, you talk about that, the appropriateness of the analog, right? What does an historical law have to look like to resemble this modern prohibition? And going back again to the Fourth Circuit, the Fourth Circuit said that, well, you know, back in the day, the infancy doctrine prevented people under the age of 21 from entering into contracts, right? So they couldn't even buy stuff at a store. If they did, you know, they could come back and they could ask for their money back at any time. So there was nothing that was firearm specific about the Fourth Circuit's analogs. And it seems to me like under Wolford, those would not be seen as appropriate because they're very generalized. The how and particularly the why is very different than the modern laws that say adults under the age of 21 can't purchase a handgun.
Yeah. And I know we're not specifically talking about Hamani, the Weed case, but actually, if anything, the language in Hamani, where, you know, that majority opinion very explicitly, it boils it down to, you know, when you're at that first part of the Bruin test and looking at, is this covered under the plain text, you know, who are the people? You're the people. Even Hamani, as an unlawful drug user, is presumed to be a member of the people with a right to keep and bear arms. And so, you know, even that, when you look at how some of these lower courts have dealt with the 18 to 20 issue, well, they've sort of used that, again, bastardized historical test at the first part to say, well, no, they were never part of the people. So we don't actually have to get into, you know, the government bearing the burden here. And I think that will be useful, right? Because the presumption is they are citizens, therefore they are members of the people, and putting that burden back on the government in its proper place at step two. And I think you're right when you combine that with the analysis in Wolford of just how closely these historical analogs have to resemble that law, for both the how and the why, right? What was the why for why they were restricting the right of these individuals for contract? Well, that's very different from most of these states have these same individuals as members of the militia who could be called upon and given a gun and trusted with that capacity. So clearly that's an indication that the why and the how are different. Certainly the how is different because, like you said, laws about contracts have nothing to do with disarming people. So they accomplish different things. So I think, you know, again, it's not just Wolford, but it's Hamani too. It's both of these cases very strongly, again, even though they're pretty narrow in what they actually accomplish in striking down these laws, they are good for how the court, I think, is going to use them to build up the next level of their jurisprudence on Second Amendment issues.
So, yeah, and I think it's a really good point because, you know, one of the things that's frustrating to a lot of gun owners, myself included, is that the court operates on court time, right? I mean, we wanted to see Snope taken. We wanted these hardware cases to be addressed years ago. But the court, I think, is being very methodical here in building up layer upon layer. Sure seems to me like, I let's put it this way, I feel a little bit better about Justice Kavanaugh's statement after Snope was denied that he expects that they'll take this issue up in the next term or two. This to me seems like a logical prologue to taking up a hardware ban case. And I wonder, again, how much Chief Justice John Roberts has to do with this, because he seems to be very much an institutionalist. And I wonder just, you know, again, if we're not seeing the Chief Justice's a thumb here at work saying, all right, you know, we'll take up this case, but I don't want to make the leap too big. We got to build up to where we're going here. Is that entirely
crazy? I don't know how much of it is just the chief, because obviously you would think in a reality where Wolford is 6'3", right? Even if the chief has different thoughts, there would still be five other justices. So I suspect that perhaps there are at least a couple of other, the more conservative justices who are also interested in whether it's, you know, the idea of percolation of getting more lower courts to analyze some of these issues or whether it's, you know, more related to wanting to slowly build up that foundation. You know, because you look at a case like Wolford, where it is just so self-evident. It's so clear-cut to anybody who's looking at this rationally and in good faith that they want to use that as a stepping stone. I will say what's unfortunate is, I hope I'm wrong, but I suspect that, you know, again, we're recording this, but before the orders are released about some of these hardware cases, to make the prediction, I actually suspect that because Wolford and Hamani just came out, what you'll see is the court grant vacate and remand some of these cases, some of the hardware cases, basically telling the lower courts, look, we just gave you some pretty substantive directions, right, that should alter your analysis of these cases. Try it again. I'm under no illusions that, you know, any of, you know, the Fourth Circuit, for example, is going to reanalyze Snope or anything else under Hamani and Wolford and come to a different conclusion. But I suspect, unfortunately, that's what's going to happen. It almost gives the court a reason to punt these cases for perhaps even another term. I hope I'm wrong. I suspect, unfortunately, that is what we will see just because they were so broad in how they addressed these issues.
I suspect that you're right. I hope that they're GVR'd and not just denied, certainly with the Duncan case and the implications for a denial rather than a GVR. But, you know, on the other hand, we also still have the New Jersey gun and magazine ban case waiting in the wings. I expect that we'll see a decision from the Third Circuit at some point this summer. I think that they were waiting for Wolford and Hamani. And I think that those cases actually do give the Third Circuit some guidance, right? I think it's legitimate for the court to have waited. But I feel pretty good about where the Third Circuit is going to land on that. And if they do come out with a decision this summer, if it's good for the plaintiffs, then New Jersey is going to have a question. The New Jersey Attorney General is going to have to decide whether or not to take the loss or to appeal this to the Supreme Court. I think she's going to end up taking the appeal, knock on wood. And that would put this, you know, oral arguments perhaps early 2027 with a decision coming out around this time next year.
Right. Yeah, I think you're right that that is certainly an option. Again, it's dependent on what the Third Circuit does, you know, and assuming that we're right in that they're holding the opinion, waiting for Wolford to come out so that they can. I don't think Wolford will necessarily change their opinion, but that they can incorporate it. Right.
I think it might buttress their opinion. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I hope you're right. But that would seem to be the case. I don't see New Jersey not appealing that. If they lose, you'd then have a circuit split on the issue. And I think, you know, obviously the Supreme Court would have to take it at that point. So, you know, again, even if we are right about the GVRs on these pending cases, by no means does it mean that we're waiting another year or two. So, I mean, you're right in pointing that out for sure.
I guess the last question I have for you, Amy, is one of the things that makes me feel so good about Imani Wolford, not just reading the opinions for myself, but seeing the reaction from individuals like Jake Charles and Megan Walsh, who have just melted down over this. I mean, they're not taking this decision well.
It's not even cope. It's beyond that.
Yeah.
At this point.
Is there anything in Wolford, and I'll throw Imani out there too, is there anything in either of these cases that makes you feel that way, where you look at the particular passage and say, I wish they wouldn't have done that, or that's going to be bad news for us?
Again, I don't see anything in there that is overt, that makes my head want to explode in the way that we're seeing some of these gun control advocates. I mean, they're legal analysts who... they're gun control advocates who moonlight as legal analysts.
Yeah.
And I think that's increasingly clear with the way they're imploding right now. The closest I come to that is, again, some of this language, like in the Barrett opinion, for example, or the Barrett concurrence in Wolford, where it could be taken to imply that the government has a pretty broad ability based on, you know, historical analogs to deem places sensitive locations based on, you know, specific evidence of dangerousness there. I'm not so sure she meant it that way as much as I am sure it will be construed by lower courts when they're looking at this for the sensitive places doctrine. But that said, even then, as I said before, I don't think lower courts needed that excuse. I think they were going to use it anyway. And I, for what it's worth, I don't really even doubt even Justice Barrett with that language, that when push comes to shove on some of these issues, you know, you look at her track record on the Second Amendment, she's been very solid going back even to her time on the circuit court with her dissent, for example, in the nonviolent felon case from prior to Bruin. Mm-hmm. With Imani, you do sort of have, you do have some language in there. You know, the court went out of its way to reiterate just how narrow it was and just all of the ways that the government still could prosecute people. But I think it goes too far to suggest that because the court left it open and said, I think rightfully from a jurisprudential standpoint, we're not going to decide that. That's par for the course with them on Second Amendment issues. But I don't see that as undermining substantially what I expect from them in building out this jurisprudence going forward. At the end of the day, you and I would both like them to just be like, assault weapons are not real, right? They're all arms in a case that has nothing to do with that. But I do appreciate that, you know, even in cases that have nothing to do with that, like Imani, they're, you know, I will take them going out of their way to sort of indicate directions on some of these issues, while at the same time not sometimes using the language that I would use. It's a mixed bag, but on the whole, I'm gonna take what they gave us here.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I appreciate your assessment. Always enjoy the conversation with you, Amy. If folks want to find you, I know, you know, PJ Media, you're publishing the Defensive Gun Uses every month. And I have to say, good job with that. I mean, I look up defensive gun uses every day, and I missed like four of the stories that were on your list this last go round. So,
well, and you do a fantastic job. You should see the ones that that we have to exclude just for time. You know, every month I'm like, man, I wish that I had 2,500 words that they'd give me. But yeah, you can always follow me at Amy Swearer on X or at advancingamericanfreedom.com. Check out what I and my colleagues are doing on not just Second Amendment issues, but on a number of other issues as well.
All right, Amy, thanks again for your time. Look forward to doing this again very soon.
Thank you.
My thanks to Amy for joining us on the program. You know, I mentioned last week, I'm going to be up in Washington, D.C. tomorrow at ATF headquarters. It's weird to think that I'm going to be at ATF headquarters, but I'm going to be talking with ATF Director Robert Sakata, ATF General Counsel Robert Leiter. If you have any questions, leave them in the comments here. I'd love to take a look, and I'll see what I can do. I am going to have a Bering Arms Camming Company. I'll tell you, I'm pre-taping the interview, but I'm very pleased we're going to be talking with Pulaski County, Virginia, Commonwealth's Attorney Justin Griffith once again. We are, well, as of tomorrow, going to be, you know, 24 hours away from the not just the gun and magazine ban taking effect in Virginia, but all kinds of other gun control laws. Governor Abigail Spanberger has also offered amendments to the state budget, one of which would delay the implementation of the ban on carrying so-called assault firearms in public for another year. The legislature is meeting today. Budget deal has to be signed by the end of tomorrow. I believe maybe it's 11:59 p.m. today. So they're running up against a tight deadline. There's no guarantee that the lawmakers will accept Governor Spanberger's proposed amendment. So all of that is up in the air. We still, again, don't know we've got one injunction in place right now as of Monday morning, preventing the Virginia State Police from enforcing the gun and magazine ban. Virginia State Police conducts the background checks in the state of Virginia. So does this mean that the sales of so-called assault firearms can continue? I don't know. All of this very much up in the air. So I'm hoping that we can get a little bit of clarity in talking with Commonwealth Attorney Griffith. Although it may be that he, too, is just as much up in the air as to, you know, what the status is for this law 48 hours or so before it takes effect. But anyway, we'll talk with Justin Griffith on tomorrow's Bering Arms Camming Company. And then later in the week, hopefully you'll hear from ATF Director Robert Sakata and ATF General Counsel Robert Leiter. Right now, let's get to today's Armed Citizen Story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. This is a weird one out of Oklahoma. Here's the headline. Pfizer released on probation after no contest plea and Martin banished from 9-county judicial district. This is one of the first sentences I can recall in which the punishment is essentially, you can't live here anymore. You are banished. You are exiled. This punishment stems from a shooting in Moreland, Oklahoma. 33-year-old Krista Pfizer and 34-year-old Waylon Martin were sentenced back on June 23rd after they reached plea deals with the state. Krista Pfizer pleaded no contest to devising a plan to perform an act of violence, which was a felony. It was reduced from a original charge of assault and battery with a deadly weapon. The several other counts were dismissed outright. Pfizer was sentenced to 10 years with all but the first 12 months suspended. And she got credit for time served since June 14th of last year, which is a year. So she did her time. She was also ordered to pay a $500 fine and court costs. Court records state that jail fees were also waived after she was diagnosed with a demonstrable mental illness while in the county jail. Meanwhile, her alleged accomplice, the 34-year-old Waylon Martin, pleaded no contest to one count of shooting with intent to kill, a second count of shooting with intent to kill, and a misdemeanor protective order violation charge were dismissed outright. Now, a no contest plea, you don't acknowledge your guilt, but you do acknowledge that the prosecution has enough evidence to convict you had the case gone to trial. Martin, too, was sentenced to 10 years behind bars. And again, all but the first 12 months suspended. He, too, received credit for time served since June 14th of last year. And so he walks as well. According to court records, Martin was convicted, quote, after a former conviction of a felony. So Martin is a repeat felon. Still given a plea deal that amounts to time served for a shooting with intent to kill. Also, though, as part of his plea deal, Martin agreed to be banished from Oklahoma's 4th Judicial District, which includes Woodward, Woods County, Alfalfa, Grant, Garfield, Kingfisher, Blaine, Major, and Dewey counties. He had to leave Oklahoma within 24 hours of entering his plea to establish residency in Texas. So even though he's banished from Oklahoma's 4th Judicial District, it sounds like he was actually banned from the state of Oklahoma, not just the northwestern part of the state. He is prohibited from entering, visiting, or residing within the 4th Judicial District until he completes the active supervision portion of his suspended sentence, except under limited circumstances approved by the court. I'm just kind of scratching my head here. So you got a repeat felon, pleads no contest to the violent crime of trying to kill somebody, gets time served for the year behind bars that he spent awaiting trial, is told you got to leave the state where you live, and that's it. That doesn't seem like a lot of time for trying to murder somebody. Maybe, again, there's some extenuating circumstances here, but I confess I am puzzled why prosecutors in Oklahoma would offer somebody who is accused of trying to murder somebody. It's such a sweetheart deal. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story from Texas, where Mr. Martin is now moving to. A neighbor shoots man carrying machete in attempt to save woman he was dragging down the street, police say. Boy, that's a mouthful of a headline. Comes from Channel 8, I believe a KFAA, WFAA in Dallas-Fort Worth. Fort Worth officers responded to an intersection just before 10:30 Sunday night and reported of a person with a weapon. Officials say an adult man and woman got into a verbal and then physical argument. That's when the man began dragging the woman down the street. She's in one hand. He's got a machete in the other hand. According to police, neighbors heard the woman screaming for help. Several of them went outside. One man actually started yelling at the suspect to stop, and when the man approached the neighbor shot the machete-wielding man at least one time. He was pronounced dead on the scene. The neighbor remained on the scene as well. Other residents called police. WFAA reports there have been no arrests made at this time. I would think, and I'm not an attorney, but I would think that under those circumstances, you are acting with lethal force to prevent death or great bodily injury to another. I'm pretty sure that this is going to be ruled a justifiable homicide. You've got, again, a woman who's screaming for help. You've got a guy with a deadly weapon dragging her down the street. That, to me, seems like you're acting to prevent the imminent death or great bodily harm of that woman. And I'm 99% sure the police and prosecutors are going to see it that way, too. But just on the off chance, there's some unknown details that have not been provided yet. I'll say most likely this is going to be ruled a case of self-defense. We'll keep our eyes on this story, though, and give you more details as they become available. Finally today, more neighbors in the right place at the right time, willing to do the right thing. This time, no gun involved, but neighbors saving a pregnant woman from a dog attack in Tacoma, Washington. The woman in question was actually due to deliver her baby last Thursday. And maybe that's why she was taking a walk. Maybe just trying to get things going. We had to do that with Missy and kid number three, who did not want to come out. Anyway, about 11 o'clock in the morning, the pregnant woman in question is walking her small dog when two loose dogs, one of them an American Pit Bull Terrier, the other described as an American Bully, ended up knocking her down and biting her several times. David Smith and Satya Boyle were inside their home in Tacoma. They heard the woman screaming outside their window. A couple ran outside. They found the two dogs attacking the woman near her parked car. Dave Smith said at this point she's still bleeding pretty bad out of her leg. He was able to scare off the smaller dog, but he said the pit bull wouldn't let go. He said, I came in, I grabbed the dog, I pulled him off of her, then I grabbed it by the butt and kind of threw it down over there. saying, I just wanted to keep the dog off of her and make sure that she was okay. He said that the woman did suffer some pretty significant injuries in the attack. He said the worst one was on her thigh. It was from where the paramedics were saying punctures on both sides going in. Her wrists were messed up. Both her ankles were messed up, he said. The dogs were eventually secured. They were impounded by Tacoma Animal Control. The dog's owner was located. Dog's owner is being cooperative with police. According to authorities, dogs will undergo a 10-day quarantine, after which the animal control will conduct a dangerous dog investigation. Following the investigation, the owners will have an opportunity to request a hearing. You know, I'm not one of those individuals who believes that, you know, every pit bull needs to be put down, that these are just, you know, walking murder weapons. I don't believe that. But I do believe, honestly, and this goes for any dog that you have, keep your animals secured. The idea of dogs just running loose in a suburban or city neighborhood to me is just unfathomable. It's bad for the dog. It's bad for the individuals who are walking down the street. It's just a recipe for disaster. So I hope at the very least these owners are able to keep their dogs secure. And if not, I hope they're able to go to a place where they can be kept secured. But I am grateful that Dave Smith and Satcha Boyle were in the right place at the right time, willing able to do the right thing to save that woman from a very serious attack. And that is going to do it for this edition of Variant Arms, Cam & Company. Again, I want to thank you for being a part of the program, as always. Looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. Well, yeah, we'll do it tomorrow. I mean, I'll kind of be seeing you this afternoon when I tape the show, but you'll be seeing. Whatever. You know what I'm talking about. I'm looking forward to talking with Justin Griffith. Looking forward to heading up to... I'm looking forward to the conversation with Robert Zicada and Robert Leiter. I never look forward to going to Washington, D.C., to be quite honest with you. But I'm looking forward to the conversation once I get there. And looking forward to sharing that conversation with Robert Zicada and another conversation with Robert Leiter here in the coming days. Have a great rest of your Monday. Be sure to check out BearingArms.com, keeping you up to date on all the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. And we will see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.